Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast. We have Sports Canada. I'm your host, Wim Lu, speaking to you after yet another statement win by the Toronto Raptors, beating the Eastern Conference leading Philadelphia 76ers by a score of 110-103. And, I mean, this was just a really fun game, actually. I mean, on top of everything else, on top of getting the win, just one of the most interesting games of the season that I've seen from the Raptors. One of the most well played. A great team effort. He played really, really hard to get this win. A lot of tactical changes on both sides, to be honest. And just some great execution by the Raptors down the stretch in the fourth quarter to really lock down the Sixers and to come away with the win, because there's no real reason why the Sixers should be that good offensively. They had like 84 points through the first three quarters. The Raptors were not doing a good job in the paint. They were doing a good job in the paint. The Sixers were also just doing a good job of getting to every single foul call, and Embiid and Simmons combining for 28 free throws, which is kind of hilarious. Raptors had 18 total, and that's with intentional fouling at the end. But nevertheless, Raptors defensively really, really locked in the fourth quarter, and the Raptors are so much fun to watch when they hit that high gear defensively. We saw it against the Bucks. We saw it against the Bucks again. And then we saw it even against the Timberwolves. That game was obviously a struggle because the Raptors should not be down that much. Although you got to give the Timberwolves credit, to be honest. I was watching back on the highlights of that one. They played their asses off defensively. They deserve some credit, even though they lost. But yeah, the Raptors, you know, when they lock in defensively, they can really get it done. And the Sixers tonight had a stretch of 10 straight missed field goals in the fourth quarter as the Raptors kind of pulled away there. And it was just a really, really fun game. You know, a lot of players stepping up and a really good team victory, really. But I think you kind of have to start in the end of third quarter, really, because the star of the show was Chris Boucher. Holy crap, Chris Boucher was incredible, man. The end of the third quarter. So if he had a pretty quiet first half, I thought he had a block in the corner on a three on Isaiah Joe, the rookie. But you know, kind of a quiet first half for Chris Boucher, but, you know, the third quarter, he checks in. At that point, he checked in for Baines. The Raptors had gone small. They went to this sort of zone look to try to cover up from the fact that Embiid was still there, and Embiid was just torching them. He hit Boucher with the dream shake kind of move along the baseline in the post, getting in for an and-one. Embiid also scored another time, so it was a bit of an issue. They had to bring Baines back into this game. And Baines played a great game. But everyone's going to get some love tonight. But that's when Boucher really started to shine. Because the Raptors went to this three, basically three forward starting line or a unit where they had their two centers on the floor with Baines, in the initial assignment against Embiid, with Boucher on the floor as well, playing power forward, and with Pascal Siakam playing three. And if this sounds familiar, it's because the Raptors famously did this to swing the 2019 playoff series against the Sixers, which was also another dogfight, but the Raptors, you know, thanks in large part to Kawhi's shot, thanks in large part to Serge Ibaka pulling up a Ben Simmons, but also thanks in large part to Nick Nurse going to that small ball group when the Raptors were desperate down 2-1 in Philly. And I swear to God, I still have nail marks in the media desk in Wells Fargo Arena, because that game was so stressful. I was just like digging into the wood until Kawhi hit that jumper. But basically, the Raptors swung that series because they were able to, you know, size up, and they started playing bigger, and they started playing Ibaka with Gasol, with Siakam at the three. And this is the kind of a situation where it was the same deal. Obviously, you know, we've talked all season about, oh man, we miss Serge, we miss Mark, and of course we do, but tonight they ran that same strategy, and I didn't really miss them, because though they were getting that kind of production, if not more, from the likes of Boucher, from the likes of Baines, and of course Pascal being Pascal. But Boucher in that third quarter stretch was incredible, because he started just catching fire from three. He made four threes. that was a personal 12-0 run for the Raptors in terms of scoring. Sensational stuff. And, you know, initially it was, okay, so Baines came in, matched up with Embiid for a while. Then the Sixers took Embiid off the floor. They put Dwight Howard in. And Dwight Howard was covering Boucher, and the Raptors were just running pick and pop, which was smart, honestly. You know, Dwight Howard wants to be in the paint. Dwight Howard's like 30 some odd years old, doesn't really want to move, he's kind of stiff. And so, you know, Boucher popping out to the 3-point line. It was funny at first because the Sixers had chances to rotate. They were kind of like, ah, nah, you're not really going to shoot that. Come on, look at the form and everything. There's no way he's going to make that three. And then he makes two threes. Then the Sixers start really trying to go at him and try to close out, but still the pick and pop, you know, was still able to create open looks for Boucher. And honestly, that fourth three during that stretch, the Raptors came out of the timeout and they ran a play for Boucher almost as if he was a shooting guard, because they had him curling around a screen away from the ball, and then a quick, point to wing pass, and Boucher hit the three like it was, you know, you would run that play for Kyle Lowry, you would run that play for Fred, you run that play for Norm, and they were running that play for Boucher, and why not? He was red hot. And he got a little putback, sneaking behind the defense. I believe Baines shot. There was a bit of a rebound scuffle, and Boucher just popped in there for a putback. Boucher was sensational during that stretch because the Raptors really pulled away. I mean, just look at his plus-minus on the night, okay? Chris Boucher was a plus 32 in 25 minutes. And that's not like an aberration or anything. Like, it really was that effective. And I thought, you know, as good as he was offensively during that stretch, which, I mean, again, this guy was launching just, you know, pure flames from his hands. But, you know, he was also just as good defensively, because with Baines handling the initial assignment against Embiid, which, you know, to be fair, Boucher was not doing that. And you just can't expect him to. He's too small. Like, the thing with Boucher, the thing with Embiid is the Raptors have obviously played Embiid quite a bit, right? And generally speaking, what they do is they pressure him, they send two to the ball, and they try to make him, you know, either pass out or, well, either pass out of a double team or just pass out of exhaustion. In the past, Embiid has not been the most conditioned athlete, although this series seems a little different. But in any case, one of the keys to doubling Embiid is that you need enough size to prevent him from going one way. You either take away left or you take right. You take away the baseline, take away the middle. And whichever way you take away, you really have to take that away, because then if he's forced to go the other way, that's where the double team can help and arise and maybe catch him by surprise, but at least sort of stop him that way. And I thought Baines did a really good job of doing that in the initial assignment. And with that happening, that freed up Boucher to sort of be more of a, you know, sort of a free safety defensively. And that's something you don't want as an offense, trust me. Philadelphia, I mean, one thing that's good about playing them is that they will often play non-shooters on the floor, right? So, you know, you have, obviously, Ben Simmons, you have Dwight Howard, Matisse Thybulle's not really a three-point threat. You know, Korkmaz, I mean, he barely played in the first half. He missed two threes, he left. Isaiah Joe is a shooter. I mean, he was a shooter in college. But how much is he going to shoot at the NBA level? We'll see. I mean, Embiid did, or Boucher did block his shot, but Boucher was able to just, in that power forward slot, kind of rotate around. I mean, the Raptors are pretty much constantly in rotation anyway because they're sending so much doubles. But that left Boucher to either help with the basket, either help with the three-point line. And, you know, it's one of those things that's really underrated about his game is how many shots he just gets to. Like, I tweeted this out the other day. He leads the Raptors in shot contests. It's not even close. He has, like, 340 before this game, and I'm sure it's probably gone up to, like, you know, like 360 by now. But, you know, Boucher leads the Raptors in total shot contests, right? And this is sort of using the tracking data that's able to figure out the positioning of each player. But, you know, what's unique about the way Boucher plays is that he not only contests a lot of shots at the rim, but he also contests a ton of threes. In fact, he's one of three players in the NBA that has contested at least 200 shots, the two-point shots, and also contested an additional 100 three-point shots. And that's really rare. The other guys are like, I believe, DeAndre Ayton and John Collins. So you really need some athleticism and size to do that. But Boucher has done so while playing like 200 less minutes than both those guys. So Boucher's just per minute efficiency in terms of defense is just off the charts, especially when he's not getting bullied down low. And I think that's why the Baines and Boucher combo has worked really well, is that Baines can cover for those low post guys. He can box out, rebound, and that just frees Boucher to fly around. I mean, he had a block on a three-point shot. He bothered another three-point shot where he didn't get the block, but the guy shot like side of the backboard like Paul George. And then Boucher had, I thought, the block of the night where he chased down Joel Embiid at the basket and blocked him right at the rim. So Boucher was sensational, and he was, you know, one of the main pivotal points in the game. I mean, Fred VanVleet was talked about it after the game. He said, yeah, when Boucher shoots like that, we win. And he was excellent. And again, plus 32 in 25 minutes. That's sensational. That's some Kyle Lowry versus the Mavericks type of numbers right there. But, you know, this was a game where they got tons of contributions all around. Like, it wasn't just one guy. You know, I thought early in the game, they really needed Pascal to, you know, get them going. The Raptors had, you know, they fell into an early deficit, which, you know, I wasn't that surprised by, considering the fact that the Raptors went to the small ball group anyway. It was actually funny because Nick Nurse said before the game, and he was talking about the pregame press conference, he's like, oh, you know, I can't really see us playing small against this team, you know, like Embiid's just so dominant. Like, you know, what are we going to do? Like, we have to go away. I know we've been starting small, but we can't do that tonight. And of course, if you watch enough Nick Nurse press conferences, he will sometimes use that press conference to his advantage and maybe exaggerate some things, or in this case, outright, you know, call a bluff, you know, basically bluff. But, you know, it turned out to be a poor decision because that small ball group was just dominated by the Sixers. I mean, it wasn't just like they had too much size to handle offensively. The Raptors just couldn't even get good shots, period, because they had so little size. And it was difficult to play through anybody. And so the Raptors got down to an early deficit. They trailed 11-2. Raptors had to call the first timeout 3 minutes into the game. Then they went a little bit bigger. And I thought really what got them out of the mud early was Pascal. Pascal had some very difficult one-on-one assignments, scoring against Ben Simmons, who is tremendously effective defensively. I mean, for all the slander he gets, he's really good defensively. And he played a great game tonight anyway, although he is still very annoying to watch. But, you know, Pascal got some tough baskets, got the Raptors going early, and the Raptors are still down double digits in the first quarter. But then Fred VanVleet came alive in that stretch because I think the Sixers went to their bench a little bit, was not less of Embiid, and Fred just started, like, it was just going off, man. I mean, he had a quiet first, like, 9 minutes, and all of a sudden he hits three threes, one including one where late shot clock situation, 2 seconds left, Fred has to go bail out the team on like a dribble handoff with 2 seconds left and shoots this like banking three with his entire body and his whole momentum shifting him towards the other side of the floor, but he twists his body and banks it in. Then he hits another pull-up three. Then he hits another three. Then he drives inside for two free throws to end the first quarter, and that got the Raptors the lead early on. And, you know, Philly started playing better. I thought the Philly's, like, you know, their bench played better than the Raptors' bench, at least it felt like, in the second quarter. It was a lot of Ben Simmons leading that group, and Ben Simmons getting out in transition, getting to the foul line. Ben Simmons shot 14 free throws today. Ben was super, super aggressive, and I thought the Raptors just didn't, you know, secure the ball enough. I thought, you know, guys like Norm, for example, 6 turnovers, just not enough. Even OG, 3 turnovers. Plays where OG was slow to come to the ball, or basically just guys throwing passes that were a little bit soft, and if you know anything about Ben Simmons, he's going to be super physical and he's going to just run through guys. And of course, he's also lightning quick and hugely athletic. So he was able to break out and get on transition, and the Raptors struggled a little bit there. And even again in the third quarter, the Raptors, you know, they instead of, you know, starting with the small ball group as they started the game, changed the starting five. They put Baines in place of Bembry. Bembry also got into some early foul trouble trying to guard Simmons. And so they put in Baines, but the Raptors are still getting cooked a little bit. The Sixers were shooting the lights out from three. They were 6-8 from three. The Sixers were doing a better job of when Embiid got the ball in the post. The Raptors doubled, swing, swing, swing. In the opposite corner, Danny Green. It was Shake Milton, you know, Seth Curry, Tobias Harris. These guys were getting open for three, and they were knocking them down. And again, it took that Boucher stretch to get them through, you know, that little cold stretch by Boucher putting on a fireworks show of his own with the three-point shots and getting the Raptors back ahead. But, you know, in the middle of all that, they needed somebody to sort of really run the offense. And I thought what was really interesting, the matchup, the game within the game, was who was the Sixers putting Ben Simmons on? Because being guarded by Ben Simmons, that was going to be an advantage that the Raptors would want to go away from, because he's that good defensively. We've seen him do some real damage to Pascal. We've seen him do some real damage to guards, you know, Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet. No Kyle today, which means obviously Simmons is guarding one of those two guys. Originally, Simmons started on Siakam. Siakam got a couple of baskets, but it wasn't like he was winning that matchup too much. But with Simmons on Siakam, that allowed Fred VanVleet to get free. You know, he had that little burst offensively. And then, you know, second half, because the Raptors were kind of hurting the Sixers so much through Fred and his play creation, they shifted the ball. They shifted that assignment. They put Simmons on Fred for most of the second half. And that allowed Pascal to get some more favorable matchups, because, you know, when it's against Tobias Harris, Pascal versus Tobias, you know, Pascal can do a lot of things with that matchup. I've seen it, you know, even dating back to 2019 in that playoff series. Pascal, you know, in that first game, you know, I think Kawhi had like, I don't know, it was like Pascal and Kawhi combined for like 75 points on like 70% shooting. And it was a lot of Kawhi torching Ben, and it was a lot of Pascal torching Tobias. And Pascal has always had the size advantage on him. He's had the post advantage on him. And if you remember from that series, they had to change up their matchups to put Embiid on Siakam. They put Tobias on Marcus Gasol, and Mark wasn't actually able to hurt them in the post. So in any case, Pascal versus Tobias is an advantage. And because VanVleet was on so early, you know, Pascal gets a better advantage, and Pascal just takes Tobias Harris to school, gets him in the post, you know, draws two fouls on him, scores over him, and doing a great job there. And then when they started doubling Pascal, you know, his playmaking has been really good of late. 8 assists, running the break, things like that, working the two-man game. Him and Boucher have always had good chemistry. Him and Fred have had good chemistry. And Pascal was just doing a good job of distributing and also creating offense. Essentially, it was whoever Simmons was on, the other guy had to sort of run the offense. And the Raptors did do that really well. And then sort of around that, they got good contributions from other guys. I thought OG, you know, on a minutes limit, you know, but he came up with some big baskets. I thought, you know, it's one play where he was isolated against Danny Green and he just took him into the post and got him all the way to the basket and scored. Norm, you know, he had some turnovers. I thought, you know, he had some real struggles. He was a minus 26 in a game the Raptors won, which is woof, but he had some clutch free throws at the end. And he also, you know, drove it inside a couple of times, although it wasn't necessarily his best game. The Sixers are doing a pretty good job pressing up on Norm. I think teams have really, really, at least good teams have really identified Norm as a very pivotal player for the Raptors. So they're putting more attention on him. But I still anticipate a better game from Norm going forward. I didn't see too much that Norm hasn't. I don't see too much of the Sixers threw at Norm specifically that should take him out of his game this much. It might have just been an off night. I thought actually Danny Green fouling out was a pretty, pretty big sequence in the game, because Danny ends up fouling out with two quick fouls to start the fourth quarter, and taking him off the floor meant another guy who was less experienced, you know, whether that was Isaiah Joe or Matisse Thybulle even, like, you know, Danny is a good two-way player, and today, you know, he hit three threes, he had five steals, two blocks, plus 18 for Danny in 24 minutes, very productive. Once he came out of the game, again, that weakened the Sixers' perimeter defense even more, and I thought that gave more room for OG, Norm, Fred, whoever to attack, but it was also kind of fun to see Pascal score on Danny or Fred score on Danny, but You know, I thought just they got contributions up down the floor. Like, I thought, you know, Terrence Davis gave them pretty good minutes offensively when he first came in. And he gave them, you know, he wasn't that involved, but, you know, he was knocking down the threes, you know, got to the rim for a dunk, had two steals, three assists, was generally playing good team defense, which is something that he hasn't been able to do the last few games. Well, pretty much the whole season, but today I thought his team defense was pretty solid. Boucher obviously did his thing, but Baines too. Like, I think Baines should get a lot of love for his performance tonight, because you might say, all right, you know, it's not that impressive, 8 points. You know, there's still some missed layups, 4 for 9. You know, he couldn't hit any threes. Everything is short from the three-point line, but you need – Baines was crucial. Like, you don't win this game without Baines, and Baines played 30 minutes. And Nick Nurse eventually started, you know, matching Baines' minutes with Embiid's minutes. So he was changing his sub patterns so that he can get that matchup more often, because Baines was the only guy who could, like, physically hold Embiid. Because you're going to need to hold him in the post, then send a double team, and then you're starting to do well. But Baines did a good job. Didn't bite on too many of Embiid's pump fakes. You know, Embiid has that stupid little slow pump fake, that almost like a JV pump fake, but, like, some bigs bite on it. We've seen even Mark and Serge bite on it. We've seen Baines and Alex Len bite on it the first time the Raptors played the Sixers. Baines did a good job of not fouling Embiid on the perimeter, containing the drive. And at first it was like, okay, Embiid was winning offensive rebounds, but you'll live with two offensive rebounds from Embiid. And Embiid overall shot 6 of 20 from the field. Yes, he gets a ton of points because he goes to the free throw line often, but, I mean, you'll take that, man. 6 of 20, you will take that. You know, Joel Embiid just came off a 50-point game, right? So for the fact that Baines was even, you know, physically there, solid enough, you know, guarded without fouling for the most part, fouled when he needed to, he did a really good job, and Baines should get a lot of love. I mean, this is exactly why you bring in a guy like Baines. I think the Raptors probably expected a little bit more from him, considering they gave him the starting role, and, you know, you expect him to contribute more than in just these specific physical matchups, but he was great tonight. He was awesome, and, you know, a guy who's taken a lot of heat this season, obviously from me and everywhere else, basically, but he was great tonight, and I'm expecting... You know, in that rematch, I'm expecting Baines to probably go back into the starting five, because you kind of just need him to start against Embiid. You kind of need to. And I wouldn't be surprised if Baines started the game after that as well against the Heat, because Baines did a pretty good job against Adebayo. So, I mean, you know, just as the Raptors have sort of recovered from their 2-8 start, I think a lot of these other guys have recovered from that. You know, Baines, he's, you know, steadying himself a little bit. It seems like him off the bench has really found a nice rhythm. He's found some good matchups. You know, him and Boucher have been a pretty good defensive combo the last three games. I guess the last four games, you know, dating back to the two Bucks games. And the starting five, I mean, you know, they just keep, you know, producing. And I was really proud of the fact that, you know, Pascal found a way to score against the Sixers, because the Sixers have not necessarily had, you know, I mean, the Sixers have had some pretty good defensive outputtings against Pascal. I mean, you know, it's just a very tough team. Again, similar to Pascal historically struggling against the Bucks, you know, they have that big wing defender, super athletic, and match him with, you know, Simmons and Siakam, just like Giannis and Siakam. And then, of course, you had someone huge at the basket. But Pascal's done really well, man. He did really well against the Bucks, and he did really well tonight. And, I mean, he nearly had a triple-double, 23 points, 7 rebounds, 8 assists. I thought he was great. And then Fred, I mean, Fred famously got torched in the Sixers series. Fred, you know, my least favorite stat from that Sixers series is that Fred got his shot blocked more often than in terms of total threes that he made, which is just inconceivable over the course of a 7-game series. But Fred, you know, even dating back to last year, he's had some 20-point outings against the Sixers, but this is still a tough defensive assignment, especially because of their size. I mean, Danny Green was a pretty good wing defender. You know, Matisse Thybulle is a really decent perimeter defender, although he just ended up fouling quite a bit early in the game. I don't know, man. This guy committed like 3 fouls and then like took a tech and then left the game. I was not sure what happened with Matisse, but I think he could be better than this. But Fred really worked that matchup really well tonight. And honestly, even though those guys are bigger than him, Fred got free, put his impact on the game, set everybody up, and had some great plays, including defensively, where, you know, once a game, Fred is going to have some sort of game-changing steal. And today, him just wrestling the ball from Joel Embiid to spark a fast break, digging down. I mean, Fred VanVleet is the absolute best player in the NBA at digging down to help in the post. It's ridiculous how often he does that and creates turnovers. And a large part of guys getting, you know, credit, like Baines getting credit for guarding Embiid, or you know, Marc Gasol getting credit for shutting down Embiid, or defense against Vucevic, or all these other guys, JV, for example. A lot of that is just Fred. Like, Fred is so good. Like, it's game-changingly good how much Fred is able to get in there and swipe the ball. And just like how he, like, literally wrestled it away from Giannis and took candy from a baby, like, he did the same thing to Embiid tonight. And those are some of the biggest players in the league. Like, literally, Embiid is twice as big as Fred, and Fred's ripping this guy and starting the fast break and getting the Raptors scoring. So, great game, great defense. I thought Nick Nurse had a really good game as well, even though he started with a small ball group, figured out his rotation as it went on. And that's great, because that's what you want to see from a coach, right? You want to see in-game adjustments. And I think now that with another game coming up, with the rematch coming up, if the Raptors can summon the similar effort defensively, I think they can take another one from this team. Because even though the Sixers do profile as a bad matchup for the Raptors, I mean, the Raptors did a lot of good stuff against the Sixers in the half court. Where the Raptors struggled in this game defensively for the first three quarters, I mean, honestly, the full course of the game, the Raptors did really well, right? Philadelphia averages like 115 points per game. They're down a 103 tonight, had shot 40% from the field, or less than 40% from the field. They shot 39%. That's a great defensive performance for the Raptors, but I think one thing that the Raptors could clean up still is their transition defense. Like, that's a large part of why Simmons shot 9 of 11 with 10 of 14 from the free throw line. You know, I think the Raptors took some bad shots, especially early on. The Sixers got free. And there's just, like, you just have to be careful with this team, because they're so huge defensively. And Embiid is such a deterrent at the basket that you're going to sometimes settle for bad shots. You're going to sometimes get pressured on the perimeter, because again, with Embiid at the basket, the perimeter guys can be even more aggressive on the ball. And so sometimes if you're sloppy with the ball, like I thought, you know, Norm and OG were culprits of that tonight, you know, guys can get out in the fast break, and the Sixers are really lethal in the fast break. So if the Raptors can cut down on the turnovers, they can do even better against this team. And that's a scary thought, because the Raptors, obviously, are only 16 and 15 on the season, but they are the hottest team in the Eastern Conference since their 2-8 start. And that's not saying that much. There's been a lot of garbage performances in the Eastern Conference. There's like, I don't know, man, how many teams in this conference are? There's five teams in the Eastern Conference that are above 500. Oh, man. So Sixers at 20 and 11, Bucks at 19 and 12. Nets at 19 and 12, Bucks at 17 and 13, Pacers at 15 and 14, which is tied with the Raptors at 16 and 15. I mean, listen, Raptors have beaten all these other teams in the playoffs picture. Only team they haven't beaten yet is the Boston Celtics, who are 15 and 15, which is truly, you love to see it. You love to see the Boston Celtics at 15 and 15 blowing double-digit leads to the New Orleans Pelicans and losing in overtime because Kemba Walker can't hit jumpers anymore. You know, the Raptors are—they're moving their way up, and they've had some really nice performances. I mean, they beat the Sixers now, they beat the Nets, they beat the Bucks twice, they beat the Pacers. You know, even in the rest of the playoff picture, they've beaten the Knicks, they've beaten the Hornets, and they still haven't played a lot of these tougher teams or these easier teams, like, you know, Detroit. They haven't played Cleveland. They only played Washington once. You know, so you know, it's looking quite good for your Raptors. And you know, this game was yet another statement win, like I said off the top. So, in terms of your three stars, honestly, I really want to give Chris the first star. I don't know if he was the best player for the Raptors overall, but he gave the Raptors such a massive push, both offensively and defensively in that third quarter and to start the fourth quarter. My favorite thing this season is seeing Chris play these ridiculously long stretches in the game where you might say it's not even totally, totally healthy to see the Raptors, you know, to see the Raptors go with one guy for that long. But, you know, Boucher has just been that impactful, where that, you know, it's that important to have Boucher on the floor. Boucher subbed into the game with the 6-minute mark of the third quarter, and he came out of the game the 2-minute mark of the fourth quarter, which meant he played 16 straight minutes, which again is not even the first time that's happened this season, but it's wild that that's happening. But he's been that good. So 17 points for Chris, 5 rebounds and assists, 3 blocks, 5 of 6 from 3, 6 of 8 from the field, three blocks, and again, plus 32 in 25 minutes. And that's not even an aberration. Like, sometimes you get some weird plus minuses because of whatever. No, Chris was the main driving factor between that plus 32. So he gets the first star. Second star, I'll give it to Pascal. 23 points, 7 rebounds, 8 assists, a steal, 41 minutes. This guy was playing great defense, 8 of 18 from the field. Got to the free throw line 6 times. I like the way the Raptors have been using Pascal as a screener, working him in the pick and roll, involving in the pick and roll, whether he's just screening to get an advantage for someone else, or when he's handling the ball and attacking a smaller guy. Today it was more of Pascal screening, but it's been pretty effective. And Pascal gave them some very tough buckets. And again, 41 minutes. I mean, it's the most of anyone in this game. It was a very heavy workload. And then third star is going to Fred VanVleet. 23 points, 5 rebounds, 9 assists, a steal, a block, 7 of 15 from the field, 5 of 10 from 3, 4 of 5 from the free throw line, 38 minutes. Just a great two-way game, as you would always expect for Fred VanVleet. So great win. In terms of your Gerald Henderson Award winner, that honestly has to go to Ben Simmons. This is the best game I've seen Ben Simmons playing against the Raptors. 28 points on 9 of 11 shooting is ridiculous. And obviously Ben Simmons is an all-star level player. I'm not giving this out of disrespect, but he was sensational tonight. And you really can't deny him. I mean, he was so physical. Punched through the Raptors' defense repeatedly. And, you know, in the fourth quarter, he disappeared a little bit. But, you know, that's what you kind of expect to see happen. But, yeah, he was a menace. And the Raptors got to do a better job in transition defense. Before I go, there's breaking news on the podcast. Wow, okay, so I didn't see this one coming, but the Toronto Raptors have lost their lead assistant coach, Chris Finch, who has been now hired to replace Ryan Saunders with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Ryan Saunders was just not very good, and, you know, we saw in that second game where the Raptors were primed to be beaten, and for some reason he put Ricky Rubio back in the game, and the Raptors were able to come back. But yeah, it is a loss, because I think Chris Finch has done some decent things here with the Raptors. I'm super happy for Chris, because this is everyone's dream to get a job in the NBA, and Chris has the same story as, you know, Coach Nurse, with playing low division basketball in the States, and then, you know, going overseas, playing in the US, coaching in the UK, and, you know, playing and coaching in the UK, and him and Nick were real adversaries and going through the G League and things like that. So they have a crazy story, the two of them. And wow, I mean, this is now the Nick Nurse coaching tree just continues to grow and expand. The Raptors have now obviously lost Nate Bjorkgren in the offseason to Indiana, and they lost Chris Finch. And honestly, Chris Finch as the offensive coordinator, I mean, early on, it was a little bit ugly. The Raptors had some ugly results offensively. But if you look at the Raptors offensively this season, they've now gone into the top 10. They're 10th in offense this year, tied with the Dallas Mavericks, who are 9th, and they have Luka Doncic. So, Chris has done a good job, and it is a bit of an awkward situation the Raptors are in now, because, you know, it is a bit of an awkward situation, because obviously you lose Nate, of course, in the offseason, but you can bring in Chris, so that's fine. But now, Chris has been hired away, and I believe, assistant coach Sergio Scariolo is still overseas at the moment, coaching Spain. Of course, he'll temporarily come back. This is just like a qualifier kind of thing. He'll come back, but that only leaves the Raptors with two front of the bench coaches. Obviously, most coaches are employed at the moment during seasons, so I'm not really quite sure what the Raptors will do. They'll have to promote somebody, but I'm happy for Chris. Honestly, this is, and I'm sure Nick will say the same thing. This is every coach's dream, is to coach in the NBA, and Chris Finch has finally, after many years as an assistant, many years coaching overseas, gotten this chance. So, you know, again, everyone wants a piece of the Raptors, because the Raptors are just, you know, one of the model franchises in the NBA, which, honestly, if you told me this while I was like a 2008 Raptor fan watching like Jermaine O'Neal play with Andre Bernani, a small forward, I wouldn't say that. I just wouldn't say that. You know, I wouldn't say the Raptors were a model franchise when they had, this, again, Brian Colangelo and this whole slew of errors and things like that. But the Raptors are really at this point where they're like the Spurs. Everyone's going to try to poach our guys, and you just got to be happy when some of these guys move on. So thanks everyone for listening. Great win by the Raptors. And the Raptors will practice tomorrow without their lead assistant coach. And they will play the Philadelphia 76ers once again to finish off their season series against Philly, in Philly, on Tuesday. So thanks everyone for listening. I really appreciate it. And I'll be back then.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics, all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.